Okay, very good morning to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 20th August, 2017, Sunday, and we are having our house dana at Brother Jin Hao's and family's house. So first of all, as usual, we would like to thank Brother Jin Hao and family for hosting this rather auspicious house dana. And all Kailamita has been invited to partake in this awesomeness. So it has been a busy day for most of you who have to help out in preparing for this house dana. And there's a lot of wholesomeness involved too. You get to rejoice and you get to do merits or offerings, so that your food can be partaken by all Kailamitas. Then we also later will invite all devas to partake in this awesomeness too. Then in the meantime, we will start off with the offering of puja, puja offering. But we need to get Jin Hao, invite the mother and family member to light the candles and the incense. Then we all can stand to make offering. Let your mother light first. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, we can start off with offering the tray. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Offer to your mother first. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. 这个offer了吗? Offer, sadhu, 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 Sadhu. Okay, thank you. You all can be seated. Then we can get ready to do our puja. Let us now compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully we shall chant the salutation. Then we will continue with the chanting based on what we have on the chanting book. Okay. We would like to invite all beings, including Jin House families, ancestors, to partake in this awesomeness. Namo Bansi Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Bansi Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Na mo bản sư Sư Gia Mâu Ni Phật. Na mo Quan Sư Bồ Tát. Na mo Quan Sư Bồ Tát. Na mo Quan Sư Bồ Tát. Na mo Phổ Bồ Tát. Na mo Phổ Bồ Tát. Na mo Phổ Bồ Tát. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivadimi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sāṅgho Sāṅghaṁ Namāmi. Okay, let us turn to page 1. We will chant the Vandana. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammā Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammā Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammā Sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Okay, now your chanda padipa puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapa ditena, ditena tamadang sena, tiloka dipang sambudang, pujayami tamonudang, ganna sambarayutena, dopenahang suganghina, Pujaye pujaniyang tang, puja bacanamutamang, vanna ganda gunopetang, etang kusumasantatin, pujayami munindasa, siripada sarorohe, Pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena matena cha hotu mokhang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata vinasa vavang adivasetu no bante Paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya tikan hatu mutamang adivase tunobante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang Adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Okay, you can be seated. Then now we will chant the puja aspiration. Based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering, we are at page 5. Understanding the significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide. Just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, bonds of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas, sharing and transferring merits with all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple check. Buddhang pacayami, Dhammang pacayami, Sanghang pacayami. Okay, you all can be seated. It's already again almost 1 month ago since we last have our house dana. So this house dana, we try to make it a monthly affair so that Kayanamita can have the condition to host this house dana. It's a very auspicious occasion and it's full of meaning, full of merit too. And it can also bring about condition for Kayamita to have fellowship, to rejoice with whatever wholesomeness that we can get to rejoice. And at the same time, all those who partake can have the condition to help prepare all this required house dana offering. And develop the understanding of the importance of this way of cultivation as recommended or advised by the Buddha. In fact, we get to do the pre-puja, then the post-puja, then we have our offering of food to rejoice with, which you will do afterwards. Then you can have your lunch. So your lunch, I think I can give you longer time. We can end at 1:30. You got almost 1 hour 20 minutes. Should be more than enough. So hopefully we can have our meals. Then after that, we will have our usual Dhamma sharing. If you got any question, you can ask. Or any topic of interest that you want me to share with you, you can also make the request. But first of all, I would like to give the honor to the host to say a few words afterwards when we commence our Dhamma sharing. Then today I brought along this book which I want to give to Chin House Mother. Yeah, sadhu, 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 sadhu. Yeah. Auntie, this book is given to you. Sadhu, sadhu. Then later on, we see how it goes. If there is condition, I will share with you some Dhamma from the earlier sharing at Wuping Jingshi. This is the 36th lesson of the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. It's a very good book. It's a lot of Dhamma there about the practice and all those things. So I brought extra copy. Yeah? If you want, you can collect it. So those who still don't have, you can collect from my house, yeah? Or Padma Suri's house, or Brother Suyan's house. Yeah? He has a lot of very good pointers. Yeah? If you read the content, you will understand. Yeah? Maybe I read to you the content. Huh? 36 lessons, 6 Patriot Platform Sutta, Dhamma sharing by Radio. Right? So the first subtopic is, what is the purpose of meditation? Then the second subtopic is, the mind must have no dwelling. Yeah? You have to meditate until that level of understanding. Then the third subtopic is, only truth and wisdom liberate the mind. Then the fourth subtopic is, meditation is not about sitting alone. Yeah? It's much more than sitting only. Yeah? Then I have my closing remark. Then there is some question and answer. Then we have our closing puja. So these are very important understanding to develop the cultivation. In fact, a lot of the sharing, they have this information. But if it's not in a transcript form, you may not be able to grasp it. Then you may not be able to have a complete structured transcript that can give you the understanding so that you can use your marker pen to mark it. Yeah? Then develop the understanding of it. That is what the Buddha meant by Pariyatti, phase one of Dhamma. Then when you listen to it, reflect and contemplate on it, then you stabilize your understanding, then put it into practice, which is the second phase, Patipatti. Yeah. So if you don't have a clear focus based on the understanding of the teaching of the Buddha, it's not easy for you to develop the cultivation. Yeah. Like I always explain, cultivators' problem is they just do without understanding. People say meditate, they meditate. Meditate means what? To know. They ask them to note, they also note. They ask them to focus, they focus. They say you do this, you do that, do everything without understanding. And by doing, you think you are meditating. And for those who are very gullible, when they use the word vipassana, they say, oh, I am doing vipassana. But the understanding is, vipassana cannot be done. It's not a method, it's not a technique. Vipassana is an awakening. Means it's a meditative awakening. We is to insight into, we is the three universal characteristics or impermanent, suffering state and non-self. Vipassana is to insight into these characteristics of nature. So how can you practice vipassana? You cannot practice vipassana. You have to develop the cultivation of the mind to insight into phenomena. Then vipassana, which is insight into the characteristics of nature, the three universal characteristics, only then it can arise. And when it arises, the mind is like completely different, it like awakened to this truth. That's why it can become beautiful. Yeah. Okay, now we will make offering, yeah, and develop the rejoicing of the dana food that you have prepared today. Where are they? Oh, outside. So how are we going to do it? Oh, use the cordless, cordless mic. Okay, can we now get ready? Then we go out and together we will make the offering. Then you all can have your meal. Then we meet back here at 1:30. Can open up the food now. No need to cover. Okay. We all can gather. Yeah. Then You will make the offering. Yeah. Okay. Just open up the cover. Then together we shall offer. Yeah. You can rejoice. Huh? Yeah. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you. So you all can have your food now. Eh? This one also can. Oh, okay. Yeah, open up this one too. What is it? Oh, sorry. Close it. Hot water. Yeah. Okay, so 1:30. Oh, just in time. I think Queenie and Manuel is here. Yeah. Come, come, join us. We just about to start our dana. Sadhu. Don't worry, don't worry. Come. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. They still got offering. We should rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Oh, this one Queenie homemade one. Sadhu. Enough. Got it. Thanks. Thanks, sir. Okay. Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So, I guess you must have had a very good lunch, because I saw all the good food. Then also, I was told Chin Hao's mom did the what? Mua chi, very nice. Then the wu tao fan, also very nice. Curry also very nice. Then I think Sister Queenie also brought a few items. Then the rojak was the best, and chow. So when you have good parami, you come for house dana, they will bring the best of all the best food for you, to sample. Then just now I purposely asked Chin Hao to strike the gong. So his house is very unique. A very simple house. Outside you may not see much, but inside you do it nicely. It's beautiful. Just like last year when I came for the first house dana that they invited us over. So today is the second time. It's already 1 year or 1 year plus. What I'm trying to share with you is the mind, if it's developed, is like a house. People may not see you as anything extraordinary or what, you are just very simple, like nothing special from outside. But you come in, if you know how to develop your mind, train your mind, it's just like how you plan your house. The house is so nice, so cozy. Of course, he got some very good antique furniture and other things. But what I like in the layout is space. Do you realize that? There's a lot of space, even though a small house. But space is something you must have in your mind. If your mind has too much of these views, opinion, conditioning and stuff inside there, then you don't have space. Don't have space means what? Like one of my teachers used to say, it's like in your whole house, you feel a lot of rubbish that you don't really need or use or you hardly use. So every time when you walk into the house, you cannot move in there. Here got table, there got rubbish, there got obstruction. You find it very difficult to move. Then what happens is Every time you knock into them, every time you kick into them, then every time you see, you recall, you get angry, you get unhappy. How come the dust come in so fast and all this thing? But if you got space, it's very clear, there's clarity. And to keep the house clean, it's very simple because there is space, you just mop clean. You got a lot of rubbish, how to clean? The wife also will give up. The maid also will give up, I tell you. So training of the mind is the same. Make it simple. Don't put in too much thing. Put in only the necessity. Then you have space to move around. Then you can have a nice house, a cozy house. Your mind is the same. Then the gong actually represents the listing of shares at all the bursa or stock exchange. So here in the Dhamma sense, it's not listing or share. It marks the fulfillment of your cultivation. When you can go for listing, means what? You have satisfied the listing requirement, isn't it? Your last 5 years track record for main board, you already achieved, growing. Then there are other conditions. So spiritually also same. For you to maybe mature, to be listed, means to be called an Arya, you also have to fulfill the condition. So just like the Buddha, he said, you can develop at least the first phase, train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path leading to heedfulness. Then you are destined for enlightenment. Means you qualify for listing. You qualify to be promoted to the main board. Means to be distinguished as a cultivator who are destined for enlightenment. It can be just Sotapanna or whatever. But at least you are already there. No more Sakyaditi. And that is what you should develop the understanding. So this analogy is very good. Last year we didn't strike the gong. This year we strike. And I was happy, it's so loud. Then just now somebody sang some song. The listing song, I don't know what. So this is something that we can learn from life itself. Society is beautiful when the human consciousness has the understanding and the wisdom. Just now while we were having lunch at the back there, we were discussing about technology. You look at China, the advancement in technology is so fast, and yet it has become a reality. A lot of people who couldn't keep up with technology change, they only know how to complain, understand? Complain, complain, and complain. But if you study the Chinese culture, Sun Tzu Bingfa, you heard of this before, isn't it? The strategy, the war, the art of war of Sun Tzu, is very famous. What is his famous verse already? So, like Ng Bi say, what is Zi Bi? Zi Bi, right? Oh, know yourself and know your enemy, then you will win. That is also very good. But there is another one. I don't know how to pronounce in Mandarin. He said, if you are adaptable to change, you will win the war. You are not adaptable to change and strategize according to condition and change, you can never win the war. So he said, the few reality, you must pick it up from Di means your enemy. Pian. Oh, the other side. Which means what? If you know that your condition is very bad, very adverse, this is the reality. Understand? It's let's say you enter into a war. Then you have been surrounded. Your food is limited, your food supply limited and all those things. Then you have very small number of maybe fit soldiers. You are outnumbered. Water may be a problem soon, rationing only. So what must you do? This is a condition. You got two choices. Give up and surrender. Or go fight and die. But there is a third choice where people never able to understand. That's why Sun Tzu Ping Fa say, you must be adaptable. You must know yourself, your strength. That's why we call it the SWOT analysis, which is under the English or Western education. They have this, but they don't know how to apply this. SWOT, S-W-O-T, means you must know thy strength, thy weakness. Then where the opportunity is and where the threat is. You do this analysis, that's why you know your own strength. You all know your own weakness. Then you look at your enemy's strength and weakness too. That's why know thyself, know the enemy. Then you plan and see where you can optimize your strength to create opportunity for you to win the war. And what are the things that threaten them? So if you know their threat, you work on their threat, then you protect your threat, you will win the war. That's why those who are adaptable, they're not rigid, you will survive and you will break free. So in a similar way, when you understand all this, you don't have to blame technology. You have to be adaptable. Technology is just technology, like money, like your thought process. It depends on the user of technology. Depends on the user of our form and mind and thought process. If the user has wisdom and understanding, means he is adaptable and he knows the strength, weakness, opportunity and threat of both sides, the condition. With that, he will create a better world. He will know how to echo and flow and make use of technology for the well-being of all, for the happiness of all. And that's what life is all about. Not to be pessimistic, not to have negativity of mind, not just die already. In the Chinese dialect, they always say, say lo, die already. Si liao, in Hokkien. Si la, si la. Everything is so bleak, so negative. That's why do not perceive anything that happened in life with negativity. That is the first thing you have to do. You have to have right view. Like the Buddha say, there are causes and conditions behind whatever that happened. So when we understand that there are causes and conditions, means when causes and conditions are like that, things will be like that. This is the reality. So whatever happened is the reality. And the reality is what Krishnamurti called what is. Or the Buddha called suchness. That's why his teaching is very simple. Whatever that happened, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, he has already taught you, he said. The five daily contemplation, the last one. We are all born our karma, heir to our karma. Conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if we don't take care of karma, our life will go down the drain. We will suffer. We will become miserable. We will be afflicted. Suffering will be the reality. So this is what understanding is all about. This is what the teaching is all about. And it's very simple when you understand. But when you don't understand, delusion can create a hell out of living beings consciousness. That's why if you fear technology, if you fear change, that is because of your delusion. What is there to fear? Who fear? What fear? Because you cannot understand the reality of the moment. You cannot come to terms with that reality, with that understanding. You don't know who you are, what you are. That's why you cannot live, you cannot act, you cannot move. Just like when I started, I say, if your mind don't have space, don't have clarity, you are going to have a problem because you have too much rubbish inside there. Views, opinion, belief system, conditioning. This one cannot, that one cannot. Your belief system don't allow you to do. Your tradition don't allow you to. This one is what they call forbidden. That one also forbidden. Or you got this rite and ritual. Missing. You got so much fear. You see, my forefather say, I walk out of the house, I cannot step on the mungkwang. Then if I see a monk, bad luck. So all these things means you got so much of this what they call belief system, conditioning, views and opinion that create fear in you, negativity in you, that allow you to perceive the world with so much superstition. And this is not wisdom, not understanding. This is rite and ritual. And sakayadity, self-delusion, will create all this. That's why the first three factors that living beings need to break to free from samsara is first self-delusion, sakayadity. And after that, attachment to rites and ritual. And the third one is, of course, the faith in the triple gem. You lack the faith, you will have problem. So when you develop the meditation, the cultivation, when you break free from self-delusion, the first fetter is gone. And when the first fetter is gone, the rite and ritual, superstition, belief system, all will be gone. Because there is no more this self-delusion that tell you after you die, this being become one and one. There is no reality. Because this is not me. This one, separation of consciousness from its form, which you call die, is not a being. It's a condition arising, dependent or originating entity, which we call our segmented form and mind, which we call the human being. But this is not a permanent and changing entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, and say, this is me, this is mine. Therefore, all this can be mine. So when you see clearly that way, there is no more delusion. There is no more, if I do this, I become one. But this is not me. This is the form of mind that is subject to karma. I only need to take care of karma, finish. Everything you do is delusion, superstition, right, and ritual. You go to feng shui, all those things. These will not determine your life. Your life is determined by your action, speech and thought process. Karma, that's it. You don't take care of karma, whatever you do, it will not help. It will not make a difference at all. So this understanding will open up the Dhamma vision for you to cultivate. So that you will not be deceived and deluded by what your religious belief or your Chinese culture or tradition that tell you all those things. Even if you are from another religion, another race, is the same. All this, they will condition you through belief system, rites and ritual. Then you are like binded. You cannot move. You don't have space. Where all this condition you to act with fear. That's why greed and fear bring about downfall. It's born of delusion, born of self-delusion, leading to greed, hatred, and fear, and all these things. So this is the first aspect of Dhamma that I want to share today. Then, like just now, before we start, I would like to maybe once again make use of the opportunity to thank Chin Hao, the mother and family, for hosting this auspicious house dana and creating the condition for all Kanamitas to partake and attend this beautiful house dana. Then we get to perform a lot of merits and wholesomeness. We get to make offering, rejoice, help out. Then we have fellowship among Dhamma friends. Then we have our puja chanting to renew our faith, to renew our precept. Then we pay respect triple gem, which is very meritorious. And we create affinity with triple gem. Then after that, we also get to listen to the Dhamma, straightening of your views. Then you can also rejoice. Then after that, we will have the closing puja to share merits, transfer merits, and develop all the other wholesomeness. So these are beautiful. Yeah? Then I forgot to invite the Deva just now. Yeah? Maybe now we turn to page 6. Yeah? We will do the invocation officially before I share the next part of the Dhamma with you. Turn to page 6. Invocation to the Devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the Devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching or doctrine of the King of Sages which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Okay, I'll pass the mic to Ingby. Huh? Then you chant the Samantha.
Samanta Chakravalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Sadhammang Munira Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana
Sopatipanno bhagavato
to Savakasango Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samijipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yaditang Chattari Purisayukkani Atta Purisapogala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttaram Punyaketa Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajama Badang Pajami Damang Pajami Sanghang Pajami. Okay, you can be seated and you continue with all Dhamma sharing. So like I promised you just now, I have this book here, the 36th lesson of the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutta, dated 31st December 2016. It was printed end of last year, so it's about 8 months already, almost 8 months, 7 or 1 month. Those who have this book, you should go back and read. It's a very, very informative book on meditation. The topic discussed was very unique. I go through with you, you understand. I got a few copies here. Maybe those who wants to use it to follow, you can pass it up. Then if you want more, you can collect from us at my Tuesday class or Thursday class. Or even Sunday class, we should have a lot more. You turn to page 4. Dhamma sharing by Brother Teo. So that day was 27 November 2016. Today is the 27th November 2016. That was when the sharing was delivered at Wu Ping Ching Sa. We will continue with the 36th lesson of the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta class. Please turn to page 206. That was based on the book by Xuan Hua, the commentary. And we will continue from there. The master instructed the assembly, good knowing advisor, the single conduct samadhi is the constant cultivation of maintaining a direct, straightforward mind in all places. So in bracket, I say this is very important. Whether one is walking, standing, sitting, or lying down. As the Vimalakirti Sutta said, the straightforward mind is the Bodhi Mandala. The straightforward mind is the Pure Land. This Six Patriarch Platform Sutra's opening statement is very profound. It's exactly the same as what I had been sharing with you all this while, except that they use a different term or name. They call it the single conduct samadhi to express it. How do they define the single conduct samadhi? According to Master Huineng, the Six Patriarch, it's the constant cultivation. But in the text, they use the word practice. Practice is not so... Sorry, practice is not such an appropriate word, because when you practice something, it is usually repetitive and mechanical in nature. But when you cultivate, it develops wisdom. So constant cultivation of maintaining a direct straightforward mind in all places means the constantly meditative and ever mindful mind. This is what heedfulness is all about. So it's exactly the same as the Buddha's teaching. Yeah. That's why the Buddha emphasized on this term, heedfulness, apamada. Dhammapada verse 21, the first of the Apamadavaka, the section on heedfulness. The single conduct samadhi is actually the cultivation of the continuity of mindfulness, continuity or stability of mindfulness, to develop the meditation, which is equivalent to heedfulness as taught by the Buddha. Huineng explained it this way. If your mind can maintain a direct, straightforward mind, which is the silent mind, in all places, whether one is standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, it includes the in-between movement. There is whatever activity or movement between the four postures. Then he quoted, as stated in the Vimalakirti Sutta, the straightforward mind is the Bodhi Mandala. Bodhi is wisdom, mandala is a way place. So Bodhi Mandala is a way place where you cultivate your wisdom. Bodhi Mandala, the direct, straightforward, silent mind, is your true mind, or Pure Land. This is very good and very profound Dhamma. The Vimalakirti Sutta is a very unique sutta, but it's a Mahayana sutta. You will not find in the Theravada text. This Bodhisattva Vimalakirti is a very wise and very unique Bodhisattva. He liked to come in the form of a lay person. According to the sutta, he had met not less than 90 million Samasambuddha. And he had a lot of wisdom, a lot of understanding. Then we move on to the next part of the sutta. The sutta said, do not speak of straightforwardness with the mouth only. It means lip service. That's why verbal knowledge is not real wisdom. If you cultivate verbal knowledge, you will not realize the enlightenment. You can never progress. So do not speak of straightforwardness with the mouth only while the mind and cultivation are crooked. Do not speak of the single conduct samadhi without maintaining a straightforward mind. Simply just cultivating, keeping a straightforward mind and have no attachment to any Dhamma is what you are supposed to do. The confused person is attached to the mark of Dhamma while holding on to the single conduct samadhi and saying, I am sitting or I am unmoving and falseness does not arise in my mind. This is the single conduct samadhi. Such an interpretation served to make him insensate and obstruct the causes and conditions for attaining the way. If you hold on to the concept and idea of that single forward samadhi or mind, you can never realize the way. So more often than not, this is very true. Most cultivators, when they go for retreat, when they are able to sit quite well, then they say, yeah, my mind is unmoving. I am in this state of single conduct samadhi and all those things. Good knowing advisor, the way must penetrate and flow. This is a very important and powerful statement. Means the cultivation, you not only have to penetrate, it must flow. Means it must happen in the midst of life, not only in formal meditation. How can it be impeded? If the mind does not dwell in Dhamma, the way will penetrate and flow. The problem with cultivators is they dwell in Dhamma. They hold on to the Dhamma knowledge. The mind that dwells in Dhamma is in self-bondage. See, they make it so clear to you, so blunt. To say that sitting unmoving is correct is to be like Venerable Sariputta, who sat quietly in the forest but was reprimanded and scolded by the Bodhisattva Vimalakirti. Do you know Venerable Sariputta? He is the foremost chief disciple of Sakyamuni with foremost wisdom. In this respect, the word printed wrongly, there is a passage, the word was need to cancel off. There is a passage in the Vimalakirti Sutta. It seems there was an incident when Venerable Sariputta was sitting quietly in the forest meditating. Then Bodhisattva Vimalakirti passed by and saw him doing the meditation. Then he spoke to Venerable Sariputta. "What are you doing?" he said. Sariputta answered, "I am cultivating and meditating." And the way Bodhisattva Vimalakirti reprimanded him actually woke him up. He said to Venerable Sariputta, "Who told you that meditation is just sitting and moving like that?" He then explained the real meditation and the real cultivation to him. "If your mind is quiet, peaceful, still and silent when you are in a stable posture, that is not meditation." You have to understand that. That is trying to bring forth the condition for the mind to be very calm. So indirectly, you are seeking peace, quietness, and silence instead of, what is that word? Instead of what? Wisdom. Because when you cultivate, you are cultivating to develop wisdom, to insight into phenomena, not to sit there unmoving, with a very calm and very stable, solid mind. That is samatha. You are experiencing the conditioned mind. The real meditation is in the midst of life itself, in the midst of activity, when you can still be peaceful, silent, still, and unaffected by whatever life situation or condition. That is the real meditation. So now you understand why daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, is very important. Means mindfulness with clear comprehension. That is the real meditation. At that time, Venerable Sariputta has not developed that type of understanding yet. So in the sutta, it was mentioned there was an incident where there was a few famous where there was a very famous great being whom all the Buddhas of the entire universe respect. They will send their representative or themselves who go with their disciple to pay respect and make offerings. But because this being that they are supposed to pay their respect and gratitude, if I'm not wrong, is Bodhisattva Vimalakirti. He is extremely wise. Hence, they have to be more careful. At that time, everybody was trying to suggest who should go. Then everyone pointed to Venerable Sariputta because he was the wisest among Sakyamuni Buddha's disciples. Venerable Sariputta, when he heard of Bodhisattva Vimalakirti's name, straight away he told the Buddha and the congregation, "No, I cannot go because I am of no match for his wisdom. He had reprimanded me before." Finally, they had no choice but to seek out Manjusri Bodhisattva Wensu Pusa, who is also foremost in wisdom. For Manjusri Bodhisattva has reached the high state of cultivation. Having completed the perfection of wisdom, that was what the sutta was all about. That is the reason why Master Huineng mentioned it here. The mind that dwells in Dhamma is in self-bondage. To say that sitting unmoving is correct is like Sariputta, who sat quietly in a forest but was reprimanded by Bodhisattva Vimalakirti. So this is the story behind. If you have not read the Vimalakirti Sutta, you may not understand. So this is an explanation which is not in the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta description. Now we shall go into the commentary and see what Master Shen Hua said in his commentary. Master Shen Hua's commentary: You should not speak of directness and act dishonestly. If you greet rich people with smiles and compliment them and say, "Welcome, welcome," in Mandarin is 欢迎, 欢迎. When in fact it's not the person you are welcoming, but it's their money, their wealth, their position, their power and status instead. So that is flattery. You speak of the singer conduct samadhi, but you act improperly. Such hypocrisy betrays the cultivator's mind. But if you cultivate keeping a direct, straightforward mind, a sincere mind, a silent mind, then your mind is the Bodhi mandala. You should manage all your affairs with a direct, sincere mind, with no attachment. See, the criteria is sincere mind. So the prerequisite for successful cultivation is faith, sincerity, and perseverance. So sincere mind with wisdom means sincere mind with no attachment. A stupid person gives rise to Dhamma attachment. Hence they will comment and they will say, "I sit here unmoving and I have no false thinking." This is equivalent to the single conduct samadhi, Master Shen Hua said. Such a person is foolish, he is completely wrong. One who thinks this way turns into a vegetable. I don't know why he used the word vegetable. In the Mahayana Zen monastery, you sit like a statue, not moving like a rock. Do you know what they will do to you? The Zen master will come and whack you and tell you, "We have enough Buddha statue here. We don't need another one." Do you understand? Can you follow? So this is typical of Mahayana Zen master. So you go for Mahayana retreat or what, if you do samatha, you better be careful. You may be enjoying your calmness, your peacefulness there, but the Zen master will come and whack you. When you sit there unmoving, no false thinking, no thought, what are you doing? You are like the statue, isn't it? The statue also unmoving, also without thought. But I think what Master Shen Hua meant could be this. When a person suffers a stroke, or when they no longer have control over their physical senses or body, they are said to be a vegetable. It means you cannot have any movement or activity physically. You may be conscious, but you cannot move or talk. In that sense, it could be a simile. But the actual meaning is, they meditate until there is no more thought, which means their mind is in absorption or in one-pointedness energy field, which is concentration, which is a conditioned state. So this is what I have been advising meditator, cautioning meditator not to fall into this energy field or samatha meditative state. You can experience them, no problem. But you have to come out of it, because this is not the real meditation. This is just seeking calmness, peacefulness, having a stable, calm mind in a formal posture. And this state is a conditioned state, dependent originating, conditioned arising. This one doesn't give samadhi. This one doesn't give wisdom. But this one is rigid, fixed. When you attach to Dhamma, you do this type of meditation. I already explained many times that it's not about what you experience. Because what you experience is a conditioned state, a mind state, that can never give rise to wisdom. It can never free you. What you should develop is the awakening, the understanding that comes through direct seeing, insight in the meditation, when you are in the midst of life. Then they will say their mind is unmoving and without any false thought or false thinking, without the heedless thinking or mental thinking. Even in that state, Master Hui Neng said, it is not the real meditation. So you have to be careful when you meditate. That's why when you meditate without understanding, you can become gullible. Especially so if you go for a retreat with all the tranquil setting, the peacefulness, and you do a lot of sitting and a lot of formal meditation until your mind becomes very calm, very still, very silent. No more false thinking, no more movement. In a very strong state of absorption or one-pointedness, jhana, etc., thinking that you have done well, then you believe you have progressed and you equate those experiences to enlightenment or awakening. You are deluded if you think that way because that is a conditioned mind held in energy field. Hence, it's not a free mind. That's why for those who understand, especially the Zen master, they will tell you this. We don't need another Buddha statue here because we have enough of them. And have you forgotten the purpose of you meditating? That's why after that I put the subheading, what is the purpose of meditation? You listen. Then you can develop the understanding. Let us now go deeper into this topic to develop a clearer understanding of what is the purpose of meditation and what is meditation according to the Buddha. Then I say, come, give it a try. Why not we give it a try? We are today not that many. Make it informal. If you got any question, you can just raise your hand. We will pass you the mic. Okay, we give it a try. What is the first purpose of meditation? What is it? Very good. You need to train, you train. So I read on. Just now I heard somebody mention something to see the truth. So anything wrong with this phrase? To see the truth. Who was it I asked? I think it was Miss Lee, right? To see the truth. What does that mean? To see the truth means to realize the wisdom. Because only wisdom frees the mind, nothing else. Just like what I have always explained to you all. Even you can sit in meditation to experience all the fantastic meditation, the calmness, the stillness, until you have no more thought, no more false thinking, so on. After you come out of that meditation, you still need to go back to life. Then you will become heedless again because you have not developed the wisdom and the understanding via the direct seeing to root out your defilement and free your mind as yet. That's why in the midst of life you still cannot cope. Now you understand why you go for meditation. Do not be gullible. Don't always believe what other people tell you. So just now, your answer is very good, to train the mind. That's why you have to train your mind to have this mindfulness that stabilizes it until it's ever mindful, until your mind enters sati, develops samadhi. When your mind is in sati, the stability of it is samadhi, then you can be mindful, ever mindful, in the midst of life to cultivate. And there is heedfulness. So, if you have yet to train, you need to train, then you train. And you have to train in the form of meditation until that sati is very stable. Then you want to experience the calmness, the peacefulness, the so-called jhana, or what is up to you. But you must not rest on your laurel or what. I don't know how to pronounce the word. Don't think that you have already realize or achieve. But that is just the beginning. The training of the mind to be aware, to be peaceful. But it has to be a free mind. If you get yourself attached to Dhamma, attached to the calmness, to the conditioned mind, then every time you meditate, you look forward to that. And when you achieve that, you think you have done well in meditation. And that is where a lot of cultivators go wrong. Then they can tell you, when I was at the retreat, I had this fantastic meditation, this fantastic experience. Then like in the Surangama Sutta, he can tell you all the fantastic manifestation, nimitta, the light, and all those things. Then very strange happening. Then sometimes psychic ability and all those things. then they can roam everywhere, every time, to the heavens, to the hell, and tell you a lot of story. So what? When you come out in the midst of life, you still no different. So that's where meditation need to be developed with understanding. So after you train your mind, the stability of mindfulness will enable you to be heedful in the midst of life. Then you have to stabilize it. That's why you have to do the four posture, followed by sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action or movement in the present moment. And that is the real satipatthana for foundation of mind. Not until you can do that, the initial wisdom cannot arise. Then you will find it very difficult to do the second foundation, vedana nupassana, leading to citta nupassana, the third foundation, and the fourth foundation, which is dhamma nupassana, leading to the awakening. Because without the kaya nupassana to stabilize your mind, to anchor it to the physical form, the kaya, this mindfulness cannot stabilize. Then it cannot become heedfulness. But when it becomes heedful, then like I say, it can be at the moment of feeling. It will stop there. It will not become craving. Because there is the stability of mindfulness, which is samadhi. And this is the one that can allow you to see things as they are and awaken and develop the understanding. We call it the direct seeing, jnana dasana. So this part, you have to understand. It is the daily mindfulness leading to the continuous awareness of all action, all movement, sati sampajana cultivation. Then from there, you will understand many, many things. The essential Dhamma all will be understood by your own silent mind. You technically don't need a teacher. The guy and the teacher can explain to you and let you awaken faster. That one is possible. But finally, on your own, you can also understand, as long as you have heedfulness, that you are destined for enlightenment. Then I read on, page 10, last paragraph. Nowadays, there are a lot of meditation being taught, some very well known internationally, and they have this usual 10 days retreat. You join this retreat, and due to its rather conducive condition there, the beautiful setting and nature, etc., your mind will become very calm, very peaceful, and you can experience a lot of good meditative state. Hence, for the first two occasions, a lot of people would endorse to it that this particular meditation is fantastic and very good. But then they didn't realize that it's just a conditioned state. It's like you experience something some beautiful mind state because of the condition there. So what? Meditation as taught by the Buddha is not just about seeking calmness and peacefulness. It's about insight into the characteristics of nature to develop wisdom so as not to be deluded by the phenomenal world, not to be entangled by the delusion that arises in your mind when you are lacking in understanding and wisdom. Understanding this is very important and very fundamental to the whole cultivation. And this is what Hui Ning is trying to point out to all those people in his platform sutta teaching. Can you follow? If you can, then it is good, and I rejoice. Otherwise, a lot of people will not be able to accept what I said earlier on. All along, I've been telling you the same message. If you go for retreat just to sit and develop all the fantastic and beautiful meditative mind state, the jhana, the tranquility, the stillness, the calmness, until your mind is like no more forced thinking, no more thought. Then you believe you have done well, very well, because you experience fantastic mind state. You can see nimitta. You can lock on to it. You can build up all the energy field and develop all the psychic ability to see images, which you think are your past life, and a lot of other related things. Like you can read mind and see your past, etc. But to the Buddha, this is not the meditation he taught. That is why he warned the monk at that time. He said, if you train your mind to do psychic and perform psychic, you are violating the Patimokkha or the monk's precept to show off and to impress people with your ability. That's why for those who understand, they will not pay attention to all these psychic phenomena. No point, because without wisdom, your mind can still be entangled. You can still be deluded by what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, and what you tactily feel or think. The phenomenal world still has power over you, and you can still be afflicted when you are confronted with the 8 type of First Noble Truth realities, starting from birth, old age, sickness, and death, leading to separation when you were with people whom you don't like. When things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, expectations in life are not met, etc. You also fail to understand who you are and what you are. The 5 degrees of form and mind, they appear so real to you, and you grasp, cling, and hold on to them. The Buddha summarized all of suffering as your self-delusion. That conditioned you to grasp and cling onto the 5 aggregate of form and mind, the so-called human being. We are thinking those are what you are. That's why he said the 5 upadana khanda, or grasping aggregate, is suffering or dukkha. So this understanding is very important and very fundamental to understand meditation. If you meditate and you still cannot understand who you are and what you are, what these 5 aggregate of form and mind are, and how, when you attach, cling, and grasp, suffering comes to be, then what are you doing? Then you are not doing it right. If you cannot insight into phenomena to realize the impermanent leading to suffering, and because they are impermanent, condition arising, dependent or originating, hence it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I, and therefore all this can be mine. There is no such thing. Hence, if your meditation does not lead to such understanding or awakening, then it's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then it's just like what they call Wai Tao, or externalist type of meditation. Those who develop this type of meditation are more interested in the psychic field, in energy field, and seeking out fantastic meditative experiences. Okay, we shall move on to page 207, third paragraph. So according to the sutta, a stupid person gives rise to Dhamma attachment. I sit here unmoving and have no false thinking. This part we have gone through. This is the single conduct samadhi. So people who say that he is completely wrong. One who thinks this way turn into a vegetable. We were here. Now you understand. Okay. Then we continue. The way should flow without obstruction. What does it mean? If you have wisdom, you will know how to accord and flow. You will not resist anything. If you stop your thought, you turn into a dead ash and rotten wood and become useless. See, this is what meditation is all about. Stop your thought means what? Yes, very good. And sadhu, if you try to stop your thought, it means you are suppressing them or controlling them. And this is what a lot of samatha meditators do. This understanding is very important. You cannot suppress and control the thought. The question is, who is controlling? Who is suppressing? The thought we say, I don't want to have any thought because it makes me think a lot. It makes me heedless. So I have to stop the thought. Who is saying all this? The thought. So the thought wants to suppress. The thought wants to control. Not understanding that the controller is the control. Now, this is where they fail to understand. You know what is the meaning? The controller is the control. Your thought try to control thought. And you think thought is real. Your thoughts keep on saying, I must not have thought, I come here to meditate. I must have peace. I must have calmness. So the thought that say this wants to have peace and calmness. So what they do? They go and meditate to control thought, to suppress thought. And not realizing that the controller is the control. Thought is trying to control thought. When thought is active, what happened to you? You don't have sati, you don't have the silent mind, you cannot see things as they are. You are actually playing about meditation with concept, with words, with thought, actively, heedlessly deluding you. That's why attachment to Dhamma has this consequence. Where the Dhamma say, you must meditate until no thought. You must have peacefulness, calmness. You must have the special meditative experience. So this is attachment to Dhamma. Where Dhamma wise, everybody, in fact most cultivators, before they really awaken, they will have this understanding. Yeah, I am not peaceful. That's why I want to meditate to make myself peaceful. First thing first, they want to make their mind peaceful. That's why they go and control thought. And so, and this will become energy field, one-pointedness. Absorption. How can you do that? It's like you are trying to control yourself. This is clearly suppression. We are at page 14, second paragraph from the top. If you don't have violence and anger, there is no need for suppression and control. Now you understand? If you are agitated, you got anger, unhappy with your meditative state, where you say, this heedless thinking is causing me hell. That's why this one want to control. But if you have violent anger, emotion, and fear, then you try to control them yourself, what are you trying to do? You are being stupid, isn't it? Because the fact is, you are violent, you are emotional, you are selfish, and you have fear. That's why you must cultivate until you have developed the wisdom to liberate your mind. Then there is no need for control and suppression. Then naturally, when you have the wisdom, there is no need for control and suppression of the thought. So what must you develop? The wisdom will tell you what? Anger is not you. Do you understand? Fear is not you. They are conditioned arising, dependent originating. Because before you are angry, there was no anger. That's why you have to trace the origination factor, how the anger arises. Then when you realize these are not you, then who is doing all these foolish things? Well, the thought. The thought is being deceived, deluded. Because of self-delusion, you are trying to do all this. Thinking that anger is you. Thinking that the heedless thinking mind is you. Then I explain, thought is just thought, like what I have told you all before. Thought is neither good or bad, just like money. Then why do you say money is the source of all evil and thought is the one that caused you all the heedlessness? Is this the reason why you want to control and suppress the thought? That's wrong, because it is the user of money that is more important, or the user of thought that is more important. If you have wisdom, there is no more problem. You don't have to control, you don't have to surprise. Thought can just arise due to respond to memory. And what is thought? Thought is condition arising, dependent originating, impermanent, not real. You grasp and cling and hold, it leads to suffering, meaning you grasp and cling at the wrong thought. But if you don't grasp and don't cling, and understand that thought is just an instrument for you to use to live life, then it will be different. Because you will know how to use it appropriately with wisdom, with understanding. Then what happens? Thought becomes your friend. It will serve you well. Then you can make use of it to arise the right thought, the wholesome thought, following Noble Eightfold Path based on right view and right understanding, which is wisdom. Then thought become wholesome. Thought become beautiful. Then you don't have to control thought. When there is wisdom, there is understanding, there is no movement. Because it doesn't deludedly latch on to anything anymore. it doesn't cling. It doesn't have to think anymore because there is no more fear, worry, anxiety, and delusion. It understands. It sees things as they are. It accord and flow. And it can be with all things. No more rigidity. No more resistance. Thing is just the way it is. That's why with this understanding, the whole of meditation and cultivation becomes very, very different. So hopefully, now you can understand. That's why all of meditation usually start off with the wrong understanding. When you don't have the correct understanding, you will do it wrongly because you think thought is the problem. Thought is the one that makes you heedless, that creates the division and all those things. But you do not understand that all this division and heedlessness come from your inner delusion. If you have wisdom, all this will not arise. Like the Buddha said, without the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance will arise. And when the mental hindrance are there, the evil roots are there. That is how thought can make you evil. Brings about downfall and brings about negativity of mind state, which include all your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation and insecurity, etc. They all come from your delusion, nothing else. Hence, meditation has to be developed with understanding. It is about developing understanding and wisdom to liberate the mind. Always remember, don't try to control or suppress anything. Think it just the way it is. Develop wisdom. That's why mindfulness is very important. To be mindful is to be aware without thought. Only then can you be in the state of silence to see clearly via the silent mind, to see clearly how this mundane mind that is entangled with the wrong view arises the causes and conditions for you to become evil, for you to become heedless. And through that understanding, you just have to straighten your view and reverse all this retrospectively. With that understanding, you are no longer deceived, no longer deluded. Then the five aggregate of form and mind will become different because it now understands how it becomes entangled, how it gets itself drawn into all this via delusion. Huineng is very wise, and he straight away knew this is where the problem is. Almost all meditator and cultivator go into energy field, and they love that type of meditation because they can straight away become so calm, so peaceful, no more thought, no more false thinking, enjoying the bliss, the piti, the sukha, and very strong energy field. And all of the nimitta experiences, including all the byproduct of this type of meditation, which is energy field, thought-based and psychic-based. Then like the Zen master said, even Huineng also said, this is not the real samadhi. This is not the one that can bring forth the wisdom. This is the one that traps you. So you have to be mindful of all this. That is the reason why in the Zen way place, you go there and sit like a statue, and every day doing the walking and sitting, then sit and sit and sit, thinking that by doing so, this so-called meditation, one day, will make you enlightened. Then they will give you the frog analogy. We are telling you, if by sitting you can become enlightened, then all the frogs would have become arahant, enlightened beings, because they also sit a lot. So it's not sitting. It's not the sitting. It's the development of wisdom. When the Zen master know that you are doing concentration or samatha meditation, they will come and hit you and tell you, we have enough Buddha statue here. We don't need another one. Now can you understand? That's why daily mindfulness is very important. Daily mindfulness and nothing else. And it is the key to development of wisdom. The form of meditation, the retreat, can be useful for you to train your mind initially. But then the real meditation is life itself, daily mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Can you maintain that silent mind, that type of so-called free mind that is in samadhi, without control, without suppression, The free mind, through its own understanding and wisdom connected to the former mind, becomes beautiful because when it is no longer deluded, then that mind serves you well. It will listen to you. It will make you beautiful. Then you can use it to develop wholesomeness. Cultivate virtue, goodness, and love so that you can become a blessing to all. This is what meditation is all about. This is what meditation is for. So hopefully by now, you understand. It has to be a free mind in the midst of life. And this cannot happen if your spiritual faculty is not developed and not stable. If your spiritual faculty is still lacking, not stable, the mental hindrance will be there. And you cannot be mindful in the midst of life. That's why you have to do it. May stabilize it. The form of meditation is to make you train. After you are trained, you have to reach a stability until the object of meditation become like very subtle, no more movement. Means that mind that is in sati, in a formal posture, can be mindful in the midst of life. Otherwise, you cannot. You can't even in the formal meditation stay aware as a free mind. You don't stand a chance when you come out into life because your senses, they are active. All your six senses, they are active. If in the formal meditation, when your senses are not active, you cannot be aware, you don't stand a chance when you're out. That's why you have to meditate and train your mind until the object of meditation becomes so subtle, until no more movement. Then you no need to suppress and control. The awareness is just silent. That's why I say, don't do anything. Don't even go and do sitting touching. Just silent everything and stay there. Then the mind will enter sati. That part, very few people understand. And when your mind enters sati, the form of mind will know. Because during that time, you will be very surprised. Even the very subtle movement like anapanasati, or your rising and falling, or whatever movement within your kaya, the slightest subtle movement, it becomes magnified. Then you realize, how come now I can be aware of this subtle movement? Then like no breathing now. Just internal breathing now. And that breathing is so clear. It's just like normal breathing. Subtle, but very clear. And very calm, very still. No movement, no thought, nothing. When contact arises at any sense, though, it's aware, finish. Finish. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then it stays at the mind base, the heart base. Then it can be at the object of meditation if you want to, and continue with the silent mind. Then everything is like magnified. Then after that, you come out of it, you are like fully aware. That's why your form and mind will know when you have sati. Even when you bow until the sati come, your form and mind will understand because you saw the sati there. You understand what the Buddha meant by sati. Mindfulness, awareness. But everything is one with the movement. Your mind suddenly like no more thought. It's just aware. The whole movement. Like I used to describe specific phenomenal awareness. The awareness and the phenomenon move as one. No thought. Like everything connected. Then you can be mindful in the midst of life. You have to start at the retreat places. Then bring it out into daily life. Then at home, do it. Because when you are alone at home, early morning, most of the thing you are doing it on your own under more control environment. Means your senses are not active yet. So when you can stabilize that daily mindfulness in the midst of life, means starting from your home activity, then you carry it out to the outside activity. That's why after you come out of your house, after you pay respect to your triple gem, everything, then you mindfully walk out to your car. Yeah. Even how you get your car key, everything, all this you do with awareness. Then how you enter the car door, how you sit with awareness, how your car key go into the ignition system and how you turn and how you step on the brake, check the mirror, enter the gear, all with mindfulness. That as you drive, you are also mindful of all movement, all action. That is how you train. During the early day, I train until I like, wow, my driving is like so perfect. Every movement, every engagement is fully aware. Then the sense data keep on coming in, but it's just fully aware. That's why it can drive with mindfulness, with awareness. Then in the office also same. When I reach the office, of course I was lucky because I got a private car park. Then I park, nobody disturbed me. I will just get my small bag, which I bring along to the office. Then fully aware how I come out, how I move out the office, how I greet people, see people every day, metta, I don't say. Then how I enter my room. Then immediately I on the aircon. I will close the door, sit, meditate before 8:30. We are 8:30, the office start. So after 8:30, I will on the light again, open up the door, then people will come and see me. Then my secretary will know. She will not call me until he saw the light in my room. That's why all these are training. Then when I conduct meeting or listen to phone call, fully aware, mindful. That's how I developed it in the early years of practice. And the mindfulness when it came is so beautiful. Okay, then I read on. That is also the reason why I have always said when you have the you have developed the right meditation according to what the Buddha has taught you, it will bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. You will have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right effort, right living or right livelihood, and right mindfulness and samadhi. If whatever you do in the name of meditation makes you more egoic after experiencing all the fantastic meditation and it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path cultivation to transform you personality-wise, character-wise, and wisdom-wise, then you better check, because that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. If your emphasis is only on the jhana, on the calmness, on the peacefulness, the stillness, and the fantastic nimitta experiences and all the other various types of fantastic manifestation of mind, when you reach those so-called deep samadhi or deep samatha concentration or absorption mind state, then it is a deviation, because that is not what the Buddha taught. The first 6 years before his enlightenment, the Buddha to be learned all this from his teacher. And he did all those energy field, thought-based meditation too. That's why he was still stuck, and he knew. That is the reason why he left them and continued to seek on his own. In a similar way, Master Hui Ning, the sixth patriarch, via his sixth platform sutta, pointed it out to you very clearly, that this type of meditation is a deviation. Okay, we shall move on. Then the next topic is, the mind must have no dwelling. You listen. This one is very important. You can develop your mind until this state, you are destined for enlightenment. Either you already awakened or you are destined for enlightenment. The way should flow without obstruction. If you stop your thought, you turn into dead ashes and rotten wood and become useless like another statue. You should instead produce that thought which is nowhere supported, no dwelling. You remember the Diamond Sutra that states, the mind must have no dwelling. It must not dwell anywhere. In Mandarin, what do you call it? Xing Wu Gua Ai. Or Xing Wu Suo Zhu. I think these are the two phrases they use there. Meaning your mind must have no dwelling. It must not dwell anywhere. Can you have that type of mind? That is the real meditation. Your mind doesn't dwell anywhere. The silent mind is able to have the direct seeing. The silent mind that is able to have the direct seeing will not dwell. Do you know how you dwell? Huh? Do you know how you dwell or not? How your mind dwell? How many of you don't know? So no need to explain. Huh? Everybody didn't raise the hand.
Everybody dwelling.
Yeah, good one. Huh? Everybody dwelling. So what is dwelling? The word is zhu. Zhu means like you stay somewhere, understand? You dwell somewhere, which is a very good word. Dwell is like you live somewhere, like a place where you stay or dwell. Do you know how your mind dwells or not? How do you dwell? Throughout the day, you arise. What? Ah, and you have been dwelling everywhere, like what Vincent said. When you perceive my voice, you dwell here. Understand? When you perceive my form, you dwell here. When you perceive the Kuan Yin Rupang, your mind dwells there. Understand?
Like just now you ask the question, do you know how you dwell? Then we are dwelling at your question.
Yeah. Straight away, because you cling to that, understand? But if you are just aware, you don't dwell, understand? Do you understand? Like when I look at that Kuan Yin, I don't dwell. I just aware. That if I want to know, I can know. It's a Kuan Yin, understand? But the mind don't dwell. That's why when I used to share with you all last time, I look at the microphone after 1989. I was so amazed. When they passed me the microphone, when I came out to share, I don't look at this fellow as a concept. I just look at the whole piece of thing without words. And it's so beautiful, so amazing. But that awareness of it is so different. Most of the time, they pass you the mic, what happened? You assume it's a mic, understand? Yeah, you don't look. Sometimes they pass you something else also, you don't know. Because that is your conditioned mind. Microphone. So what? Microphone, what is there to see? Understand? But when you are just aware, there is so much thing there. You are just aware. That's it. That's why without the word, without the concept, even the art, that so-called gong, the concept is not there. It's just the thing. It's not learn how to see like that. No. You cannot learn how to see like that one. When you understand, means you understand. When you don't understand, the word, the image, the concept, keep on coming out on. Because your sanya, your perception is so fast. Understand? You don't have the ability to see things as they are. The direct seeing. Without the movement, the activity of mind, at the moment of seeing, it's just that thing. That's why the Buddha say what? In the seeing, can you see the consciousness itself, conscious? That itself. When your mindfulness stabilize, that is what happened. PG is here. Understand? You see, while I share with you how I know PG is there. Because this one inside no movement. Then I saw movement. Then if I want to know, I can know. Understand? Then even as she walk or even Poland walk, it's just that thing. Then all the movement like the autocade, it's just the awareness. That is what the direct seeing is all about, the silent mind is all about. But it's very difficult for you to understand before you have that understanding. Means before that thing happened. You understand? It's just like if you are an accountant. After you have gone out to work, experienced all the thing, then the accountant will explain to you all the account in his own understanding and way. He can do it so fast because he is already very experienced. He's very good at it. But if you are new to accounting, you look at him. What he's trying to say? You don't understand. Similarly, meditation is like that. When you are not at that level of mindfulness, the cultivator who has gone through had to use word to express it to you. Understand? Concept to let you understand. But if you have your past cultivation, you can understand very fast, like Huining. He has done it before. What he did is truth. The moment he hears truth, he understands. Just like what my nature was, eventually. And sometimes the person who spoke the truth has not penetrated the truth. But this nature already awakened to it. That's how it happened. Okay? Yeah. So now that you know what is dwelling, then you will understand why living being who think a lot is very heedless, where they dwell everywhere. Now I read this again. Okay. Do you know how your mind dwells? How do you dwell? Throughout the day, you arise the thought. And you have been dwelling everywhere. So how do you dwell? The moment you perceive something, you dwell there. Can you understand? Then that moment, the moment you perceive, you think. You become heedless again. That is why the silent mind is the meditative mind. And the silent mind, which is sati, is capable of direct see. But when it is aware, it don't think, not like you. The moment you perceive, the concept, the memory come out, the thinking come out, the conditioning, the reaction, the stirring, all sankara come out. That's like avijja paccaya sankara, very fast, that link. Then sankara paccaya what? Vijnanam. You cannot see the vijnanam. Straight away namha rupang, the content of consciousness come out, where you input very fast. Oh. Then after that, vijnanam paccaya salayatana. You don't even know that you have sense basis. Dependent on sense basis, arise contact. You never even at the moment of contact. So all this paticca samuppada depends on it. Got no meaning to you when you don't have the sati or ability to be mindful of them. That's why I say when your mind has this stability of mindfulness, it can be at the moment of contact. It can be at the moment of consciousness. It doesn't move. It can be at the moment of feeling. Feeling will remain as pure feeling. It's just there. No word, nothing. Nothing come out. Yeah. But if you want to know, you can know. That's why most of the time you are just aware, perceive. That is what the enlightened being's mind is all about. But you cannot learn to be in that state. You have to have that stability of mindfulness and the understanding to be in that state. When you understand, you will just, like the baby. You know what is the baby? Baby can have the pure awareness, pure perception, because he got no memory of what this thing is. He can see things as they are. That's why they are very cute. They don't have cunningness. They don't have self-delusion. They won't have all those things when they see. That's why as a cute little baby, a few days old, or after their eye open, you see how they respond. To them, everything is like very, very pristine. Then you talk and play with the baby. You say, Mommy. That's how you condition the baby. Then you talk. Then he just, that pure perception, they just see that thing without word. But because you condition them. Then after that, they will just giggle. There is joy in them. Unless they want milk or they already want to pee or they pee already, then they will cry. That is the natural response of the form and mind. So this direct seeing has to come when the brain is matured. That's why there is meditation. If you are like a baby, that type of direct seeing no use. It doesn't help you at all. But you must be in the midst of life with that memory, with that conditioning, and yet your awareness can be aware of the direct seeing. And that is what meditation is all about. So, which is sati, which is capable of direct seeing. So what is the definition of sati? This is very important. So what is sati? Sati is awareness before the... Always remember this definition. The moment you know means you are not in sati. Means you perceive already. At that moment of perception, it's still okay, understand? But straight away, your sankara activity come out. Your stirring, your reaction, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your tradition, everything come in already. Then your command. Then you become heedless again, lost in thought again. Yeah, you are hardly aware. Why can't you just be with the moment? Aware. Because you have not trained your mind. Your spiritual faculty is not stable. The hindrances are there. So what is hindrance? Like and dislike. Sensual desire and ill will. That's why throughout the day you have then fear, worry, anxiety, restlessness of mind. Of course, sleepiness will only happen when you don't like that topic or when you are not in the mood to listen. Then you feel very sleepy, very tired. But doubt, a lot of doubt. Sure or not? True, God like that one. See, inside there. Then especially you are from another tradition, you this one never heard of. I don't think he understands. He's bullshitting. My teacher never teach like that. The book also never write like that. Buddha also never talk like that. So this type of mental chattering, this is all doubt, understand? Why can't you have an open mind to listen attentively and put it to test? What have I got to lose if I have an open mind to listen? Maybe it's not something I can understand as yet, so I leave it open. Then in the future when I cultivate, if something happens, then it can connect you back. But if you just cut it off and shut it off, this is what the Buddha mentioned under Sarika Sutta. You hold on to your views tenaciously. That is the 45th Sarika Sutta negative mind state, the last one. The Buddha say, all the first 44 you have, the Sammasambuddha can save you. But you hold on to your view tenaciously, even the Sammasambuddha also cannot save you. It's mentioned in the Sarika Sutta. You go and check. Those who hold on to their views tenaciously, no one can save you. You have been so deluded, rigid. It doesn't mean you accept. No. Just don't hold on to your view. It means have an open mind. Is it so difficult? It's not that difficult. Why must you hold on to your rigid thinking, your views and your opinion, and refuse to open up your mind? Then what happened? Like the Zen analogy. Your cup of tea is what? Oh, nothing can go in, is it? Then everything that the Zen master pour in is overflowing. Then you some more gullible, you tell the Zen, hey, overflowing already, master. Then the Zen master look at you. He say, you are exactly like this teacup. Your cup is full. Nothing can go in. You are not listening at all. You are more interested in what? In arguing, in commenting. You experienced this before, not? A lot of people, after you explain the thing to them, their reaction is, I don't think it's like that. What I learned is like that. What I read from the Buddha Dhamma, the Buddha's teaching is like that. This type of comment. Then he said, no lah, my teacher don't teach like that one. My teacher teach like that one. Means, they are not listening, understand? They are not having an open mind. They just want to reject. Means, you are listening according to what? Your views, opinion, and conditioning. And you are more concerned about right and wrong, understand? The art of listening. Remember the brown book? At Sister Nancy and Sia's house, the art of listening. You listen without the commentator inside, understand? Without the views, just silent, attentively listen. If it's the truth, you will benefit. If it's not the truth, you will know how to filter because you have the understanding. But before you even listen, you straight away have an opinion of it, you are not listening because you are using your conditioned thinking. It means you are acting according to memory. Well, your memory tell you all this. Without memory, the baby learn very fast. Understand? Anything you teach, they learn very fast. That's why the kid learn language, learn dialect, everything very fast. Because they not only have an open mind, they have a clear mind. And they are very naive. They just take in everything. That's why they say, like a soft sponge, everything go in. But when human being become too much knowledge, after you have developed too much knowledge, what happens? You become rigid. Very difficult for you to accept things. Your mind is so different, so conditioned. That's why the Buddha said, knowledge bind. You know what is knowledge? Everything that you come to know is an obstruction. Knowledge bind. You know the deep meaning. Krishnamurti also say the same thing. The worst person in this world, he used the word, the most dangerous person in this world is the one who say, I know. You know what his answer was or not? What is there to know? Everything that you know is your thought tell you. It's knowledge. It's not wisdom. Wisdom is an understanding. It's not a knowledge. Do you understand? Yeah? You see the difference or not? Wisdom is an understanding, an awakening. It's not a knowledge. You cannot store it in memory and say, next time I'm going to use the same knowledge to act. How can you act with memory? Because every moment, every instant, the conditions are different. Do you understand? Memory is rigid. Knowledge is rigid. That time that thing happened with that condition, then they tell you it is soft like that. And you think every condition is the same, every human being is the same. No. That's why the whole of understanding is not based on rigidity or knowledge. Wisdom means the understanding applied to all. No matter what the condition, the understanding is the understanding. Like the universal characteristic. No matter what the condition, the characteristic will be the same. Do you understand? Non-self means non-self. That one is truth. That one is wisdom. It's not a knowledge. But the knowledge is a very rigid one. Okay, we read on. Sati is awareness before the knowing. What know? Perception know. The moment you perceive, you know. How do you know my voice? The moment you perceive it, you dwell here. Hence, you are not aware of the outside world. The moment you perceive the Buddha image, that instant your mind dwells there. The word is, when you dwell, you allow your conditioned mind to condition you into further thinking. Hey, this Buddha image is very nice, very beautiful. I wish I could have one. Where did you buy it? So this proliferation of thought, if you are not mindful and not aware, it already takes you off tangent and make you heedless, lost in thought. You easily become heedless, and this is how dwelling can make you heedless. So the mundane mind dwells everywhere because it constantly perceives. True or not? Throughout the day, all the words keep on coming. Perception. It doesn't mean you cannot perceive. You can perceive, but after that, don't create a train of thought. Understand? Why must you keep on thinking? That's why in the early day when I was in Form 6, I wrote this essay. I said, human being is a creature of thought. At that time, I already knew. I don't know how to meditate. I already saw my thought. That's why I say, living being or human being is a gregarious being. You know why it's gregarious? Need companion. Need friend. Need people with one. Need relationship. Gregarious. And I don't know how I got this word. I saw it in the newspaper. Then I check up the dictionary. Then I realized this word is very good. So when I wrote this essay in Form 6, Lower 6, you know, my teacher's remark was what? He just write three words at the end there. You know why? What is the three words? Rather deeply thought out. And she didn't put any more comment after that. Because she read, she was shocked. She said, a Form 6 student can write until like that. Then I wrote in the essay, I said, Form 6 is a stepping stone to tertiary education. to higher tertiary education to understand more deeply about the thought process, about the human mind, all this thing. That's why I said the essay, really. And when my classmate sit next to me, he saw the comment, he looked at me, can I read your essay? I say, by all means, go ahead. He read. After that, he quietly passed the essay book back to me. He said, wow, you're thinking different. I don't know why, at that time, my, what they call, mind was so different, the thought process, where it can expand the understanding to a very, very different level of understanding and scope. Okay, I read on. We don't have much time left. But when you have the silent mind, the true mind, it is just aware. It sees things as they are. It does not dwell. That's why you can just be aware, aware, and aware in the midst of life. It just flows. Everything just flows. The mind and the phenomena as one specific phenomenal awareness, it just flows. It doesn't dwell. But to live life, you have to arise your thought and you have to perceive. But when you have the understanding and the wisdom, you can perceive without attachment, perceive without accumulation, perceive without dwelling on it, without getting lost in it. It just perceive, aware, aware, then perceive again, etc. This is the part you must underline. If you can meditate until your daily mindfulness becomes like that, 100%. You would have been awakened. Otherwise, you cannot do this. And this is what the true mind is all about. This is what the enlightened being's mind is all about. Most of the time, it's quiet, silent, unless it needs to arise. That's why it can be with the moment. To experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life, it's just aware. That's it. And this comes from the first two links. When there is no avijja, what happened? That's why the enlightened being's mind is without avijja, there is no sankara. What is there to think? Who think? The thought want to think. Of course, it can perceive. It can reflect. It can contemplate. It can understand things. But this thought is no more like before. The heedless thinking mind, mundane mind, no more. This is true mind, pure mind. And this mind just aware. If you want to understand it, understand. Just like just now I mentioned. You can be aware, then you can perceive without attachment, without accumulation, without dwelling on it, without getting lost in it. It just perceive, aware, aware, then perceive again, etc. That's what meditation is all about. That is the reason why I used to remind you all that you have to meditate until you can realize and understand all this so that you can produce a mind that is a free mind that does not dwell anywhere. That is Zen. And that is meditation. That is heedfulness or apamada. And you have to be in that state in the midst of life most of the time. That is the reason why the real meditation is not what people think. It's not just about sitting quietly. Now you understand? Then I will read on. This chapter is going to be very good and very interesting. I didn't know this chapter already talked about this. Master Hui Neng said, you should produce a mind, not a thought, which is nowhere supported, or the mind that has no dwelling, by attaching yourself neither to emptiness, to existence, nor to Dhamma. These are the three marks. You understand? Attachment to Dhamma results in attachment to existence. And attachment to existence results in perishing in emptiness. But when you are unsupported, the way will circulate freely. Means you do not cling, you do not hold. You do not attach or dwell. This is Xuan Hua's commentary and interpretation, because theoretically they will talk about this. To add to that, my explanation is clearer and deeper. So you listen. Eh? You neither attach yourself to emptiness is because the word emptiness is not emptiness. And the understanding of emptiness is not your intellectual knowledge, not a concept. There, nor to existence. You know what is existence? Existence is the phenomenal world, all of phenomenal. If you dwell, attach, and cling, you will get into trouble, for they are not real. And mind make adi, nor to Dhamma, for Dhamma is truth that can allow you to realize the wisdom and the understanding. To live life. That's why these three explanations which Xuanhua couldn't explain is because he maybe haven't developed the penetrative understanding of this aspect of Dhamma. Mm. Then we go to the next subheading. Only truth and wisdom liberates the mind. This one, by now you should be very clear. Nothing else free you. Not the fantastic meditation. But when you attach to Dhamma, what happens? If you dwell on it, attach to it, and want to argue about it, we are right and wrong, then you will have problem. You want to be right, so you want to challenge others. Then it defeats the whole purpose of meditation. That is attachment to Dhamma. For Dhamma is the truth. Truth liberates the mind, frees the mind. It is an understanding. The moment you understand, the mind is liberated. The mind realizes itself and sets itself free. That's why the mundane mind that realizes itself will cease to be. It sees the delusion in doing all those things, the foolishness in doing all those things. That's why meditation is mainly about wisdom. The moment you understand, you are free. But the moment you don't understand, you remain the same, continuously deluded. Heedless. You will continue to hold, cling, and react to sense experience through your views and opinion and conditioning because you lack wisdom. You cannot understand truth, the reality. You cannot see things as they are. You see things through your tinted, perceived views and opinions and conditioning, your memories, your conditioned mind, your storehouse of consciousness, accumulated knowledge and experiences of life. Everything that you hold on to, cling on to, like your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your scars of memory, your happy and unhappy moment, your misery, etc. You hold on to them and accumulate them all. Then you retain them all in your memory. Now you understand why accumulation is suffering. This is the Mahayana expression, which is very good. Ku ji mie dang. So when you accumulate them as memory, there is attachment, there is craving, there is clinging, there is delusion. That's why it points towards the same meaning. Memory is useful, but it is not for you to store all the psychological memories that can give rise to suffering, which can condition your fear, worry, and anxiety, because these are all wrong memories, wrong thoughts. That's why I always teach you how to understand what wrong thoughts are, which is more important. What are wrong thoughts? Thoughts that conditions your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow and lamentation, etc. When you project your thought, you worry about the future. When you recall the unhappy past, your scars or memories, then it conditions you to be unhappy. It also includes thoughts that condition your selfishness, your emotional negativity, your doubt, which are the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Without greed, you cannot be selfish. That's why all these are wrong thoughts, born of wrong view. When you understand that all these are wrong thoughts, then your mind that understands via this wisdom will enable you to straighten your view. You will not create all this wrong thought anymore. Then you will diligently learn how to develop through right effort and right view what constitutes right thought. What are right thoughts? All of the good and wholesome thought that brings about love, compassion, kindness, goodness, goodness of heart, respect, gratitude, contentment, harmony, peacefulness, happiness and joy, etc. are all right thoughts. Apart from the four Brahma Viharas, right thoughts of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, there are also a lot of other right thoughts, like thought of generosity, respect, contentment, gratitude, sincerity, etc. These are all right thoughts. Then thought of gentleness, pleasantness, kindness, goodness, all these are also right thoughts. The thought of love to help people so as to be a blessing to all is also a right thought. Then to have faith, to develop the spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to the wisdom, is also a right thought. To be in the state of awareness or mindfulness leading to heedfulness is also a right thought. Then to enable you to cultivate the first two of the four right efforts to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen, and to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, you must understand what constitutes wrong thought. Then to enable you to cultivate the third right effort, to cultivate the right thought that are still not in you, you have to understand what constitutes right thought, which you still don't have, like the thought of kindness, goodness, generosity, good emotion, love and compassion, etc. Just like the Mandarin video which I just sent out this morning for sharing. What does it say? The first thing you must have if you want to improve your life greatly is what? Take care of what? The word in Mandarin that says, if you want to have the vital virtue in you, all of your problems will fall in place and get resolved. What is that? Yes. So this one is your pichi. Pichi is what? Your anger, your temper. Your temper. Pichi is temper. Which is your anger, your temper, your emotion, your mental negativity. Pichi yao hao. Pichi hao, yi qie dou hao. So you understand, huh? Yeah. That's why if you don't have that understanding, you don't have that goodness, this kindness, then every time you get angry, throw your tantrum and become emotional, unhappy and aggressive and hit out at others, you will become evil because all these are evil roots, roots of all evil that will make you evil. That's why it brings about downfall. Your business will fall, your relationship will fail, your marriage will be affected. And you will have problem with your children, even when you go to office, you don't know how to communicate with your colleague and your staff. Interact with them because you don't have the goodness, the kindness in you, as well as this understanding in you. So meditation is all about Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. This is right view leading to right thought, all the good and virtuous thought. You should check your life. How often do you cultivate right thought, your gratitude towards what people have done for you? Whether it's a part of your nature to thank people sincerely for what they have done for you, for what they have sacrificed for you, rejoice in all the wholesomeness and goodness that people have done. Be sensitive to others. Understand the world. Understand fellow living beings. And understand everything else within nature. To do that, you must have wisdom. Only then you can feel for them, so that you are not selfish. Otherwise, you will always think of yourself, and selfishness, which is a very strong evil root, will always be there, because the deluded mind can cunningly come back through the back door to deceive you again. We are telling you to consider selfishly for me or not for me, advantage to me or not. Otherwise, I don't want to do them. All these are selfishness. Nothing to do with my family or business. I don't want to get involved. No advantage to me. I don't want to know. That's why you don't have love. You don't have sincerity, generosity, kindness, and goodness. You are not able to help people. You are incapable of kindness and goodness. That's why such people cannot develop virtue, because they don't have sincerity and they are very selfish. They always think of advantage and motives. Hence, meditation has a lot to do with Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. That's why life itself is the meditation, because it is only in life you can apply the Noble Eightfold Path factors. And this is real meditation. You cannot develop a mind that is free, that understands, that does not dwell, you will suffer. You will know what will happen when you dwell on your unhappy past. Meaning, you hold on to your grudges, your anger, your hatred. Do you know the meaning of grudges? In Mandarin, it's called 仇恨. I think Mandarin word more clear. This means you hold on to your vengeance and grudges so strongly. When you understand all this, you will develop wisdom to straighten your view, to reverse all this negativity of mind state. When you understand that all this bring about downfall and bring about wrong thought leading to suffering, cause your karmic nature to fall, and they will make you weak and miserable. And when you also understand that, you hold the key to your own life destiny, to be happy or to be unhappy, you have a choice. The word you will missing. You will never allow yourself to become afflicted again or become so deluded anymore. That's how you will wake up and you will choose to be happy and change overnight. This is just common sense. And you will not do all those stupid and deluded things again. Because the moment you understand, you are free. You can liberate your mind. This is the real meditation. Okay, can you all follow? Well, somebody answered, can. Good then, we read on. Attachment to Dhamma result in attachment to existence, and attachment to existence result in perishing in emptiness. But when you are unsupported, the way will circulate freely. It means you don't dwell, then you don't deludedly grasp and cling and hold. You will not have suffering. You become free. Your mind is liberated, and there is nothing in this world that can bring forth the condition for you to have fear, worry, and anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, or even the slightest unhappiness. No more, because you can clearly see how that form and mind, with the wisdom connected, understand that all these are not real. They are just condition arising, dependent originating phenomena, and mind make are they. Only for my mind, and he know you, he know me. Just like what the Buddha said via his Dhammapada verse. The Buddha said, my son, my child, my wealth, my property, this only the fools or the foolish one lament. For that very body doesn't belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth, and all those things. Those who have wisdom, they will understand all this. They will not cling, not hold. But they also understand that the conditioned world is the conditioned world, and the existential world is the existential world. In the existential world, there are things, even though they are not real, in the ultimate true sense. But they are still subject to its sets of nature's law, for example, the law of karma, which recognizes relationship and thing. But that pertains to the form and mind, nothing to do with the ultimate wisdom. But because our form and mind is born of its karma, heir to its karma, conditioned and supported by its karma, and it is what it is because of its karma, subject to this law of karma. Therefore, the form and mind still has its duty towards this law of karma. But with true understanding or wisdom, or in true emptiness as stated in the Heart Sutta, there is none at all. There is none of all this. So when you have the ultimate truth understanding and the understanding of the existential world, meaning the supramundane and the mundane, then you would have developed perfect wisdom. This will help complement your understanding. Then you can live anywhere on both sides because you understand the unconditioned and the conditioned world. That's how your mind can transcend duality, transcend all the phenomenal world of consciousness. Like the lotus, it will arise even though it is from the muddy pond, but it will stay above the field to blossom into full blossom. That's why it's so beautiful and so unique. That's why the symbol for Mahayana enlightened being is the famous lotus flower. Okay, this part is very good. then the way will circulate freely means you are free to move. There is no resistance, no more impedance. There is no rigidity and you just accord and flow. The mind that dwells in Dhamma The mind that dwells in Dhamma, means you attach to Dhamma, is in self-bondage. The statement is very powerful. When you dwell in Dhamma, you create the Atta, the self, the mark. You create the attachment to Dhamma. That's why it's self-bondage. We are self-delusion or sakayadity. You get attached to meditation, Dhamma, and sitting without moving. You tie yourself up and become a prisoner. Sariputta, Sakyamuni's disciple, foremost in wisdom, sat in the forest quietly meditating. But the layman, Vimalakirti, reprimanded him, saying, "What are you doing? What use are you sitting like there like a corpse? It should be like a statue." Is the other word corpse. This particular understanding on chapter 4 is very useful. That's why the title is called Samadhi and Wisdom. This is one pair. When you cultivate, you must understand this pair. They come together. Do you remember? Samadhi and wisdom go hand in hand. And Samadhi is not concentration. Please bear that in mind. Samadhi is the collected mind, unwavering mind. That is why it is related to wisdom. When wisdom is stable, Samadhi will become even more stable. Then it will accumulate into Upekkha, the last enlightenment factor. But initially, without Samadhi, you cannot see things as they are to realize the wisdom. That's why the two are interconnected and related. You cannot separate them. You cannot say, "I just want to cultivate Samadhi." They are interconnected in many ways, like the stick analogy I gave last Sunday. When you pick up a stick, there are two ends to it. You cannot say, "I hold this end, I don't want that end." Then the stick disappears. That's why Samadhi and wisdom, Panya in Pali, they are together. Do you have any question? Don't have. Then we shall continue. The last paragraph, good knowing advisor. There are those who teach people to sit, looking at the mind and contemplate stillness without moving or rising. They claim that it has merit. What do you think? A lot of people do that. They call that cittanupassana according to their own interpretation. They say, "I can be mindful of my thought." They claim that it has merit. Confused people not understanding easily become attached and go insane. And Master Sun Hua used this harsh word, "go insane." There are many such people. Therefore you should know them. The teaching of this kind is a great error. By now, I really hope you can understand. I will go through this one more time. There are those who teach people to sit and all those things. The key word is to sit a lot. Then keep on looking at the mind and contemplating stillness within, without moving or arising. Who is the one looking and doing all this? The thought is looking at the mind and contemplating stillness. And because of that, they are so actively arising the thought and thinking instead of meditating. So one thought is trying to look at another thought, and they call that cittanupassana. The real cittanupassana is about mindfulness. It's about the silent mind in sati, choicelessly aware or watching via awareness. You don't go and look for it. Only the awareness is aware of it. It's totally different. Then when you sit in a formal meditation, don't contemplate. You only contemplate when you are out of the meditation, having a free mind. Then you can contemplate and develop the inquiry. Then from there, the contemplative understanding, which is the second turning wisdom, will arise through the silent creative mind in contemplation. All this meditation, when you do it without understanding, you will end up doing all this, including sitting without moving or arising. It means you sit like a statue down there. Do you think by just sitting one day you can become enlightened? Maybe your mind can become more and more calm, more and more peaceful, and more stable. But then every time you have problem when you are back to society, you will have to run back to the retreat or meditation center and try to perfect it again. Again, when you come out of such meditation, you realize that you are not peaceful when you are back to normal life. So you go back to it again. That's why a lot of people say they cannot live in society anymore after going for long meditation retreat. They say society and the world is crazy. Of course, they use a lot of Dhamma, mainly knowledge-wise. They say crazy in the sense that there is so much noise and disturbance outside there. There are so many activity and problems in life. There is also too much sensitivity and distraction. There is no way one can meditate. Then society also has so many things that can make people miserable. So by running away, sitting in meditation and making themselves peaceful in a tranquil setting with such a conditioned mind, state of mind, is not going to free them. It's just a temporary measure. But the moment you go back to society, you cannot cope. You cannot live as a normal living being. And you say it is a crazy world full of crazy things. If the Buddha is like that, he cannot be the Buddha. He is the Buddha where he is at peace everywhere in the midst of life and society. All this need understanding. That's why Hui Ning can understand. Now let us look at Master Hui Ning's comment. The deluded person does not understand the principle, means the true cultivation. They think I just sit here and not get up. This is the way to attain skill in Zen meditation. They get attached to what they are doing, meaning the sitting, and they go insane. For example, many people have come here saying that they are enlightened. That is insanity. There are many such people. Teacher from their number say, if you certify my enlightenment, I will certify yours. Like an exchange, I honor your Datuship and Tan Sri, you honor me too. You honor me back. Eh? That is a big mistake. In China, in the Tang Dynasty, there were false Buddhist patriarchs who practiced intellectual Zen. You know what is intellectual Zen? Intellectual means knowledge-based. Based on the intellect and the knowledge. They have clever answer, but no foundation in actual cultivation. They can answer you in debate because they quote the book. They repeat the answer that Master Hui Ning and the Zen Master gave. But they don't have the understanding. They will quote to you like the mind must have no dwelling, Xing Wu Suo Zhu or Xing Wu Kuo Ai and all those things. But they don't have the understanding. They only have the words, the knowledge. They have no realization. Then they will argue with you on what that means according to their interpretation. They have clever answer but no foundation in actual cultivation. It's not surprising that we find such people even in America today. But this imposter who falsely claimed to be enlightened paved the way for those of true enlightenment. No one knew about enlightenment, so the imposter say we are enlightened. Everyone then say, so this is enlightenment. And they examine themselves closely to see what enlightenment is. Suddenly a true enlightened being come, and no one believe in him. They think that the true enlightened one is the same as the imposter. You who now cultivate to become enlightened will be forced to deal with the widespread influence of such pretender or imposter. That leads Master Xianhua to advise you on the following. When you become enlightened, you should not say you are. That is the best method according to him. This is the way of the world. True, true, false, false. False, false, true, true. I think it's a direct translation. Zhen zhen jia jia, jia jia zhen zhen. I think it's a direct translation from the Mandarin word. Zhen zhen jia jia, jia jia zhen zhen. If you are true, they say you are false. If you are false, they say you are true. Therefore, you should not speak of truth and false. Tell people to go and see for themselves. meaning you don't attach or cling to duality. Thing is just the way it is, no right, no wrong. True and false is your perception, means reality. One should inquire, true according to whom, false according to whom. But the reality is just the way it is. That's why there is no right, no wrong. An enlightened being will like that they are enlightened. An enlightened being will say that they are enlightened. If you have already become enlightened and claim to be enlightened, then you are just like those who are not. Why? People who are actually enlightened do not introduce themselves saying, "Don't you know me? I'm enlightened. I'm the same as so-and-so, who is also enlightened." Enlightenment or non-enlightenment are the same, not different. Do not hang out to false name, enlightened. You are a human being, unenlightened. You are still a human being, even when enlightened. The enlightened and the unenlightened both can realize Buddhahood. It's just a question of time, so do not advertise yourself. If no one knows you, that is the best. Then your straightforward mind is the Bodhi Mandala. That's why the ego will not be there. You won't be tempted to tell people. But for those who understand, they will tell you very clearly that this one is not them. You can say that this form and mind, when it has developed the wisdom, the insight and the direct seeing, it is enlightened. But this one is just a form and mind, not a permanent unchanging entity. So how can it be you? That's why, how can you claim that you are enlightened? It has got no meaning. That's the reason why, for those who don't understand, they will go around and deludedly claim that they are enlightened. They will use words to impress you because they want respect from you and they want followers. When they have followers and people who respect them, then they will get a lot of monetary support from them. But for those who are truly enlightened, they will naturally understand that their virtue, wisdom, and understanding will shine forth on their own, and there is no greed in them. There is no delusion in them, and they can never take advantage of you or ask you to believe them or join them. They will allow you the freedom to decide, to investigate for yourself, to find out for yourself, but it is your life, nothing to do with them. Their duty or nature is to share what they understand when there is condition. These are what cultivation is all about. You have to have that understanding, not to be deluded, not to be gullible, not to just easily believe people and allow people to condition you. If without proper investigation and understanding, you just simply go and quote, then follow the crowd to promote all this, that can be very dangerous. But if you yourself have cultivated and developed the understanding, then you don't have to worry. Just like during the early years, after I met my teacher, Prachanyantra, I learned so much from him, I could feel him. Then many years later, he got into some issue in Thailand, and there were many types of negative story about him. Then they forced him to disrobe. Despite what happened, I never wavered because my nature knew. I could feel his nature, and I learned a lot from him. I received the Dhamma from him, and I have continued even up to today, dare to say that he was my teacher, and he taught me very well, despite what the world say about him. Most people would have run away, trying not to have anything to do with him, because they may think if he goes down, their image or reputation will also be affected. If you have anything to do with him, others may perceive you the same. It's like what the Buddha has said, it's not like that. There are causes and conditions behind. If you cannot see those causes and conditions, you will not understand. Even the Buddha During his time, he was also affected by the Jinja incident. For many months, he had to endure all the abuses and accusations, whatever people said about him. Jinja had accused the Buddha of making her pregnant for many months until Ananda also could not take it anymore. He told the Buddha, "We have to leave this place. Nobody trusts us anymore. We don't even have proper support anymore." The Buddha said, "No, 3 months from now, it will come to pass. If you try to walk away, wherever you go, the same news will travel," he said. This was due to his past karmic action. The Buddha knew and told Ananda, "I had to endure all these abuses and accusations, and it will come to pass in 3 months' time." That's why after that, everything cleared up, because Jinja's pregnancy was a fake used to plot against him. He was not even pregnant. But ill-intended people wanted to bring him down. It happened because one of the past lives, when Sakyamuni Buddha was a bodhisattva, he scolded and abused a Pacheka Buddha without knowing that that person is a Pacheka Buddha. He said a lot of bad things to that person. That's why when it was his turn to become the Samasambuddha Buddha, then there are conditions. He got it back, the Jinja incident. Even my teacher, Acharya Yantra, also had a similar karmic condition of the past, affecting him this life. I met one of his disciples who visited me at my house after somebody told me about him. Then we decided to invite him over to share with us what he knew. There were conditions then. After that, we came to know a lot of things. According to him, Acharya Yantra told him that all those happening are related to his caste, his karmic past. He had to pay back all this past wrong action. Hence the reason why he can accept what happened. Then he was very happy, very peaceful, where he just allowed the thing to settle. It seems many lay people and monks helped him to fight the case and finally got him an amnesty to stay in the United States. He won the case, he cleared them all. It seems they tried to extradite him from the U.S. government via diplomatic channel because it was politically motivated. But finally, everything was cleared. But that news was no longer important by then. What you need to understand is don't become gullible by the big names you hear or be affected by the bad news you hear. You should investigate them yourself, cultivate and realize the true Dhamma. When you have realized the true Dhamma, you will understand. Then you have no more worry about what the world say, what people say. Just like the famous quote of the Buddha, "The incense is fragrant, will shine forth and spread far and wide." The incense really has its fragrance. Hence, similarly, for those who have the parami, the wisdom, the virtue, and the understanding, when they share the Dhamma, their nature will shine forth just like the fragrance of the incense. All this, you have the understanding, the wisdom, and the meditative training. Then you can sense them, you can feel them, and you can recognize them. Just like my cultivation in the early days, I didn't chase after famous teacher, I didn't chase after big name, and all those popular monk and teacher. I will investigate, and I will find out for myself via listening attentively and observing them first. When there were conditions, I will go and listen. But because my nature understands, the moment I listen, I will know which one has the Dhamma and which one don't have the Dhamma. That's why I had a lot of affinity with a lot of good teachers, good masters, and I learned a lot from them. But for those that my nature doesn't have affinity with, somehow it didn't click, and I couldn't develop much understanding from what they shared. Some were very famous and popular, but no point because their nature understand. Sorry, because this nature understands very clearly the way and the cultivation. That's why it's very different. Hence, Huineng's sharing on this part is very important, very beautiful, so that you understand. Okay, we stop here. Huh? I think it's getting late. The next topic you read yourself, page 37. Huh? Meditation is not about sitting only and the rest. So this book, make sure you go through it again. How many of you have read this book? Huh? We print this book, nobody read. Oh, I see. You better go back and read, because there is a lot of things to understand. It describes to you clearly how all this understanding can come about. Okay. Before I end, I will pass the mic to Jin Hao, the host, to say a few words. Okay, Jin Hao, you go ahead.
Dear brothers and sisters and Brother Tio, first of all, I would like to thank you, Brother, for coming. And also, very importantly, is to have these conditions to allow my moms and my sisters to do the wholesome thing, you see. That really thankful to everyone. And thankful to Brother Tio and Brother and Sister Parmasuri for bringing Brother Tio and Brother Mrs. Tio, and all those that bring the fruits to here or participate in whatever form they are. I really thank you for everyone, and as we brought to you, that I, over the past 2 years, I noticed there are a lot of differences, a lot of difference in me, and at least I know that what are things that I should do, and what are things I shouldn't be doing anymore, see? So, thank you. Thank you, brother.
Okay, anybody want to add anything? Oh, you got any final question? Anybody? Before we end. I think we should be able to end by 3:30. Now it's about 3:23. No question. So we do our sharing on merit, because some of you may have to top out. There are a lot of leftover. Okay, maybe we will recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past few hours. We will start off by sharing all this merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakkhantu lokasasana itta watta ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Itang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Itang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Jimina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you. You can pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones.
Thank you.